What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan.
Joey, did you know that I'm competitive?
Are you breathing? Absolutely.
I mean, I went out on a date with Megan this weekend, and it was right after I'd finished playing a board game, Monopoly, with 3 of my daughters. And I told her, it's like, I don't know what it is, but I just had to win that game.
You couldn't throw it. You couldn't let them win. You couldn't teach them a lesson.
No, I couldn't. Like, I wanted to teach them, and I was teaching, but internally, man, I really wanted to win badly.
I don't know that you should feel guilty about that. Do you feel guilty about it?
I did. I felt guilty. I mean, I'm not saying I played unfair. Like, I wasn't using any negotiation tactics that normally I would use differently with another person. Like, we played the game differently. Have you ever played Monopoly by the real rules?
Real rules.
Yeah.
Oh, you act like there's a difference.
Well, have you ever played where when you land on a property, you either buy it or you put it up for auction?
Yes, I have, actually.
I never played that way, but that is the way that you're supposed to do it.
That's a lot faster way, probably.
It is a lot faster. And early on in the game, I ran my kids out of money because I knew I put it up for auction and I started bidding them up. Well, they wanted all the properties. And so I would bid it up like 100% past its value.
On the one that you could have bought. Like, yeah. You landed on it.
Or anybody landed on it. I would just drive the auction price up. So I ran them out of money, and then I started buying properties that I wanted. And then I started negotiating between the 3 of them in order to, you know, wheel and deal to get the properties so then I could ultimately put Red Hotels and just
dominate
in the game.
So did you win? That's the question.
Oh yeah. It was lights out.
Okay. So what did your wife say about
she left early. One, she was like, I know that about you. I know that you really like to win. And I'm just thinking, like, if you're listening to this, are you like me? Do you really play games with your kids or with friends and just this inner desire to like win?
I have the same thing. I have the same problem. I'm kind of a quiet competitor, as you know. Like, I like to come up from behind and just crush you, you know? I hate that because, you know, my daughters start crying and everything, and I hate that about it. But it is a good thing. And
your daughters started crying.
Well, just whenever you come up from behind them and crush them, you know, like.
We
played a game this weekend, Rubik's Race. Have you ever played this before?
No.
It's like a Rubik's Cube, but it's like a board. And you're playing against each other, almost like Battleship, but it's on your own thing. And then once you get to the right organization of the different tiles, you slam the thing down on your side, and then you win. Okay, because you're trying to match.
So how did you come up behind them?
Anyways, I'm just saying, like, you know, they think that you don't even have a chance, and then all of a sudden it's just like, wham!
You're kind of the sneaky.
Yeah.
Sneaky guy.
Yeah, like, I want them to think that I'm not going to even compete and then just crush them.
There's no trash talking.
Well, you know, I will trash talk from time to time too, but mostly that's with you.
Okay.
But today's guest played a game of his own, right? He is in the middle of playing that game. We're talking about the cash flow game, and we are talking about none other than Jay Massey, who is a master implementer of the game cash flow. But what I love about our interview with him today is how he uncovers the actual process in real life. Anybody can play a board game. Anybody can get competitive on that end, but he shares how he had to get competitive at a whole new level.
Well, when you're listening to this interview, you're going to hear the trials. I mean, he and his wife had some health issues that set them back that actually propelled them, though, in life, where he had to figure out, as you said, Joey, he had to figure out the rules and had to figure it out because it required, it was the difference between eating and not eating.
Life and death.
It was the difference between paying the hospital bill or not paying the hospital bill.
That's right. Yeah, I am just inspired by what Jay has to share with us today and what he didn't share, which I cannot wait to hear his Q&A because there's so many things we left on the table, am I right?
Well, we always leave things on the table, as you know this, as you listen to us. That's why you love us. We talk about lots of things. We make finance fun. That's our goal. And Jay has a podcast of his own, the Cashflow Diary. I encourage you to go listen to that because he's constantly bringing value. He's done tons and tons of deals. He understands the insides of real estate, and he's going to share with us, and you're going to kind of hear throughout the time that not only has he learned how to trade things like on eBay personally, but then started doing that from a real estate perspective, and now he's got a whole new lease on life as he starts to look at how to do short-term rentals.
Lease on life. I like how you just ended that. Let's not talk any further, and let's jump straight into this interview with Jay Massey.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income through one of these five pillars that you're talking about. But how do I do it? Stallion, tell them. It is so easy.
So easy that we created the longest URL possible. So you may want to write this down. freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and you can set up your call with one of us. We're excited to talk to you.
Welcome into the show. We have Jay Massey, the illustrious master facilitator of the cash flow game, live in the studio. Welcome to the show, Jay Massey. How are you?
So far, so good. I feel very fortunate.
Man, well, we're excited to have you. And as we were talking pre-show, I love to start off with your story. And as I filtered back 500 episodes to get back to the very first one you did, which amazingly, it actually was very interesting. Unlike, I think, probably our first episode.
Yeah, don't go back and listen to ours.
We had no clue what we were going to be talking about. And it's probably changed five times since then. But there was a series of events that happened in your life that really changed your course, your direction.
Right.
Goes on in our life makes us stronger. It builds our faith. So I want you to take me back to the moment, to the time where your wife is pregnant, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you guys realize something was drastically wrong. Take me to that moment. What was going on?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can imagine. So at that time, I was a self-employed financial planner, was helping people with their 401ks, retirement plans, that type of thing. That was the world I understood. And she had a great job at the time. And she was the double college degrees, all this stuff. Anyway, everything that you're supposed to do in life, she did. I did all the opposite. Anyway, and when she's pregnant, she has a condition known as hyperemesis. For those of you who are not, you know, up on the medical, it simply means she couldn't eat or drink while pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that caused a lot of stress. Sure. I decided to go play volleyball. I jumped. I landed on a guy's head, punctured my lung. Being born with asthma, I could not walk and talk simultaneously without fainting. I say all of that to say one thing. That was the first time I learned the lesson that I didn't need a job, but I needed a source of income. Mm. And that was the problem, is that I didn't have a source of income that was not dependent upon my physical or her physical ability to get to and provide value to the marketplace. So we learned the hard way by having a whole lot of no money in a very short period of time happen to us and not being able to physically do much about it and just literally sitting watching it happen.
Because when I was listening to your story, you basically were forced with the decision to go find a job or to sit with your wife who was in a really dire situation. If I remember right, you said that like literally she almost died several times.
Yeah, almost twice. And that's why it was crazy. That's why it's like, how do I focus and be good at anything when at any moment? And if you can imagine, and I know for those that have fathers out there or men who've ever expected a child, you remember when the due date gets near, how your phone becomes precious because you're like, every ring, is this the one? Is this the ring? Is this the ring? Well, it was just like that, but is this the phone call where they tell me my wife is dead? Wow. And it was stressful. I can't even begin to tell you. But at the same time, we needed food. We needed, you know, electricity, water, all the things that it takes to still live were still present. And it had to happen somehow. And because we didn't have a source of income outside of our physical labor, a source of income that was disconnected from time, I had to figure out a way to make something happen. Mm.
So take me back to that point. So that's the turning point where you realize that there's a problem. Up to that point, like you said, we're doing the things that you're supposed to do. She got the education. She got the good job. You have a decent job. You're in financial advising at the time. Mm-hmm. So walk me through from that point, what had to happen to change that problem?
We even had the 6 months of expenses set aside because, you know, hey, we were going to practice what we preached.
Right.
And we found out that 6 months wasn't enough.
No doubt.
And what started happening is we started selling our personal possessions on eBay because that was the only thing I could think of. So I literally would go in the closet, go, okay, we're not using that. Let's put it on eBay and see what happens. I'd start at 99 cents. And if it got a dollar, great, because it was one more dollar than I had. And if it's a dollar, I could now turn into eggs or milk. And that mattered at that moment. That's all that mattered at that moment. And this is why I know today, beyond a shadow of a doubt, anyone watching, hearing, listening, anything in the sound of my voice, if you have the capacity to hear us right now, you have at least $3,000, many of you, $10,000 in your garage of stuff that you are not using that needs to be on eBay right now and could go to someone else, provide more value. I know that it's there because after we ran out of our stuff, I started asking friends at church if I could have their stuff, which then turned into intentionally going to other people's garage sales and finding their stuff that they would sell for $1, $10, $15. I would do quick research and figure out that, hey, this is worth more than that if I put it on eBay and expose it to a larger market. And we would make the difference in between. And that's literally what we did. And I it's amazing to think back, but this was literally tens of thousands of dollars per month of doing that, which meant hundreds upon hundreds of shipments and trips and back and forth to the post office and the amount of boxes and everything while somehow still trying to make time to go to the hospital to make sure that I was still being my oldest, you know, was still around at that time, obviously, and take care of myself because I was having trouble, like I said, walking and talking simultaneously. I had to find something where I didn't rely upon my physical ability to walk and talk simultaneously that still gave me time to see her, take care of all of my other responsibilities, and make sure that we had to eat. It's very stressful.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that sort of pressure to be a dad, a husband, and a provider, and both of you are in a health situation that doesn't lead itself to being able to produce income. So you obviously had for 4 years had been the financial planner advisor. You had seen a lot of things. Up to that point, outside of trying to, you know, do the 6 months reserves, what had you been doing and was it working?
Well, I knew in the back of my mind that real estate was the answer because being in Orange County, California, I've been around people with money, you know, individuals, single individuals earning hundreds of thousands, multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, and married individuals, same. And I saw that those who had a real shot always had rental real estate. So what I knew is that I needed rental real estate. The gap was I didn't know the first thing about how to make any of that happen. So that was always playing in the background as I kept learning and playing the cash flow board game, because that's really what happened, is that a friend said, hey, come play this cash flow board game, which introduced me to the concept that real estate could actually happen for people who are a mechanic and teacher and an airplane pilot, as the cards say.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, wait a minute. If I can do this in a game, what would happen if we did this in real life? And I wish to some degree, people think I'm making this up, but this was our entire strategy after playing the game, is my wife and I started scouring the newspaper and Yahoo Finance, looking for stocks that sounded like the cards in the game. And then she found one. And we're like, well, in the game, if I got that card, this is what I would do. So we did that. And then that particular one actually went up literally 1,000%, which told us, oh my God, this is real. The game is real. What else don't we know? And that started me learning, and us learning everything that the Kiyosaki Rich Dad organization had to offer.
So you never read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You just started with the game.
Yeah, the game was our first exposure, because that's an unknown secret. If you ever want me to come to your house, just invite me to play a board game, because I love board games. My wife likes food. So if you bring us, you get both of those, you got us both. That's just kind of how it works.
Well, and then a lot of people don't know that was the start to Kiyosaki, actually was the game Cash Flow, if I'm right. And that's what, you know, spawned off
the book came later. Yeah, the book came later to help sell the game.
That's right. That was the genesis to the whole financial teaching model. And it was through education, through the board game. So,
right.
So you as an advisor, I heard you say this on your podcast that, you know, you'd seen the accumulation model. Most people know the strategy of just saving every dollar they possibly can and then accumulating enough to get to a point in time where they can ride off into the sunset, take 3.5%. And then they go, wait a second. I can only take 3 or 3.5% of this. That doesn't really work. I need $10,000 a month. That means I have to have $3.5 million or something like that sitting in a bank somewhere. So you had saw that as a strategy that was pretty broken. And one, it takes so long to get to that point that let's kind of fast forward now. So obviously all of these things are happening. You're playing cash flow. You're learning about this. You and your wife are making decisions. Talk to us about real estate and how you realized maybe that was the strategy. Like you could literally do that live.
Well, and this was there were a number of stages of unlock on that one. In that one, what I realized is we as humans, and I'm talking to everybody, and still today, because of, you know, monetary policy, fiscal policy, everything, we can't earn money faster than they can print it, period. Once you understand that, you then have to go, okay, what do I do? Because that means if I am saving dollars, US or any currency, then the value, purchasing power that I am saving or think I am actually storing up for later is actually being eroded. And therein lies the challenge. So what is the defense? So when I began to frame this in the terms of a basketball game, for lack of a better analogy, it's like, okay, well, I get that defense wins games, but right now I don't have any defensive strategies. How do I combat this machine that's in front of me? That was the question running around in the back of my mind, okay? And what happened is that in the middle of doing all of the stuff with eBay, a friend of mine sat me down one day at lunch and said, simply, you need to become a real estate investor, which sounded crazy to me because everything I had learned to that point said real estate investors had credit and money, neither of which I had at the time. Right. So, credit score of 398 and literally no money because, you know, I had to sell stuff on eBay. I'm like, and again, oftentimes as humans, when we're presented with an opportunity, we go straight to what we don't have. You know, I'm not qualified. And here are all the reasons, right? And for whatever reason, in this particular case, I didn't do that. And I just simply said, well, you're going to have to show me how, because I don't have all of these things. but I'm willing to try. Tell me. I was desperate enough. I was no longer in a position to pretend that anything else I was doing was great. And I was willing to now accept someone else's ideas, because I had to just come to the realization that my best thinking created the situation that we had. And this is still true today. If you're unhappy with the situation you currently have, your best thinking created it. Now that you got that, then the question becomes, okay, what are you going to do about it? And I started doing wholesale transactions. You know, that's where, and what's interesting is that someone made the connection. They said, you know, what you're doing on eBay is a lot like wholesaling in real estate. And I'm like, explain. And there's like, yeah, you're buying stuff at a discount, selling it at a discount really quickly, right? Yes. Well, that's exactly what you do in wholesaling, except it's houses with more commas and zeros. And my wife was the one who figured that out. So understand, first she finds the stock, then she figures that out and tells me and says, this is what you should be doing. Because I was going a completely different direction. I was chasing really big dollar signs with short sales and other stuff. And she's like, you need to be doing this. And then I stopped. I was like, okay, well, then let's do that. And what that evolved into was where we would buy and sell houses, sell them for $2,000 to $26,000 in profit to us difference. So that was the delta we would earn, but we would do so in 72 hours or less, which then led to the first time we had made 20 grand in a week. And I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. My credit score was still 398. We're still squatting in bank-owned property, running from the police, trying not to get evicted. We're doing all this stuff in real estate that supposedly isn't possible, yet I'm holding in my hand closing statements and checks, and I'm looking at money in the bank going, huh, how many other things have I always been told or assumed were true are actually not true? Because I have the physical evidence in my hand now. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just go see how far we can run with this. Because you just taught me a skill. That's all I need. I'll do it. I'll repeat it. And that's exactly what we did. We did well over 200 wholesale transactions. We got introduced to the tax man because I didn't know what I didn't know. And then I'm like, well, I don't want that to happen again. How do I fix that? Right. And someone said, well, you need to keep the properties. And I'm like, well, how do you do that? Because I didn't know how to do that. I knew how to get them real fast, sell them real fast. Right. But how do you keep them? Which led to us learning to raise capital. Under what I call our house collecting phase, because that's what ended up happening. We ended up collecting hundreds of houses, and then we traded all those in for apartment buildings. And then we started trading some of those in for commercial. And then we eventually got to cell phone towers, et cetera, et cetera.
But wait a minute, you just switched games on us. Like, you were on the cash flow game. It sounds like you're now doing Monopoly. You trade the
correct. In that's for exactly hotel, what happened. Right?
I mean.
Okay. Yeah, the four green houses for the one red hotel, because I forget where I was, but I was actually in a training with Robert Kiyosaki, and he had said that very thing live to he's like, yeah, trade in four green houses, red hotel. I'm like, that makes sense. So I'm like, okay. And then that combined with my CFO at the time said, and she addressed me and she said, Mr. J. Matt, because I was excited. I had just closed the deal, got another $200 a month of passive income. And she just looked at me and she's like, and I'm like, what? It's $200 more a month. This is great. She's like, Mr. J. Massey, the amount of deals that you have done and everything that you now know, $200 a month is not worth your time, blah, 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 blah. You need to be making more money per transaction when you close one of these. And I'm just like, so there's this half like, who are you talking to me? You know, and then the other half is like, she's kind of right. So, and then I'm like, so what do I do? She's like, that's your problem, not mine. I'm like, okay, great. But that's how we ended up in apartment buildings, because what happened is shortly after that, I was doing a cash flow event, training some people, and someone in the audience specifically said, yeah, it worked. What you did, it worked for houses, but I bet you it wouldn't work for apartment buildings, which was more than enough to send me down the road to prove them wrong. And that's exactly what I did. Yeah. So we went out and started collecting apartment buildings for a while.
All right. I have a quick question. I'm going to jump in here.
Go for it.
So you just mentioned one person that challenged the way you think about how much your time was worth, right?
Yep.
In that case of the $200 a month of passive income, she's like, wait a minute, you're beyond that. To me, I refer to those as moments where my lid was raised.
Yep.
Who were some of the other people, maybe just a couple examples where you, it sounds like that's what was happening in this whole journey for you. Your lid kept getting raised. What are a couple of other examples where you remember that happening?
Oh, it's everywhere, because what was happening, and this principle is talked about in the book, The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles, is that the person or the man or woman of increase attracts other people to push in such a way that you become more capable of more. And that's exactly what was happening for us. So, you know, and it, oftentimes it was internal people who said things to me like that. One person made me a clock. On that clock, they replaced the numbers around the clock with dollar amounts, to where it at every at the 12th position was $500. So that was the minimum. So the thought process was, if the activity you're doing cannot bring the company at least $500 every 60 minutes, every hour, then you personally don't do it. It doesn't mean it doesn't need to be done. It means you don't do it. So that set me on this path of, okay, what am I doing that doesn't produce $500 an hour? Offensively, am I scoring $500 an hour? So back then, that was what that meant, you know. Hey, so that meant I hired an executive assistant, because you got to get rid of your calendar. Someone else was doing the bookkeeping, the accounting, the tax preparation, and the future financial planning for the company. Someone else was running payroll. Someone else was literally interfacing, because at this time, you've got to understand, a portfolio that spans multiple states and hundreds of units and lots of buildings, it's a lot of responsibility. So someone, you can say, I'll just put a property manager in there. But passive doesn't mean uninvolved. So we had a full-time person who was interfacing with all of our collection of property managers on a daily basis, making sure that everything that needed to run and needed to happen was happening, so we could continue to provide the clean, safe, affordable housing. All of that was stuff that I had previously been doing that no longer needed to do, which then gave me time to focus on the whatever the bigger things were, the bigger relationship building, et cetera, speaking and the public engagements. Or, well, once you have a portfolio that's large enough, you're going to spend a lot more time with politicians than you may want to. So you've got all of those things to deal with, is exactly what was going down.
All right. So one thing, a lot to unpack there, but one statement that you made, which I definitely want to pull back out, because this is a common misconception as it relates to creating cash flow, to creating passive income being greater than our monthly expenses, is that it is passive. And there's this thought process that, man, I just want to hand it over to somebody else and let them do it.
Yeah. No, that's how you lose.
Unpack that for me. Yeah. talk to the unpassive nature of passive income.
So no matter how much, so when I say passive, what I want you to begin to think of, income that you aren't necessarily value that is being created, but doesn't necessarily require your daily involvement. Meaning right now, as we're talking, inside of our short-term rentals, value is being created right now. But I'm talking to you, right? I'm not cleaning. I'm not selling. I'm not reserving. I'm not handling any of the customer. That's someone else's job. That value is happening. Therefore, I'm free to go create more assets more in some other way, shape, or form. Now, that doesn't mean someone isn't watching over it. And I'm also watching over them. There's always a law of maintenance in effect. So in fact, I found this out because I tried what you're talking about. And what ended up happening is that the property manager ended up embezzling well over $800,000. And that was a really bad day, let's just say. And so at the end of the day, you have to watch. You know, you can't just go, well, it's all going to work, nor can you go, well, everybody's going to do their job, because they're not. I mean, I know no matter how much you want to go, well, they all got your back, to a point. Right. And there, you know, you don't know when that point is, and you need to make sure that all of those things are there. That's not to say don't trust people, but it is to say trust but verify.
And create structure for that environment. We do that with kids, with employees, with people that are managing money and helping us manage assets. We have to have structure. We have to have control measures. We never give all that control away, because like you said, then bad things start to happen. All right.
Yeah. So and it's not because anyone is trying to do anything bad, but it's because they're human. I mean, if you go unsupervised with no accountability, well, duh.
Yeah.
Same thing can happen there. There's a reason the IRS says April 15th, or for some of us, October 15th, is the deadline for getting those taxes in. Because if they didn't, you wouldn't.
Right. Well,
there's 100%.
There's a famous law out there, Parkinson's Law, and it's that concept of the demand will rise to equal the supply.
Yep. You give me more time. You know what? Suddenly it takes longer.
That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No doubt, and you
just have to understand that. The thing that I think, though, that's really missed about understanding passive income is what it actually takes. I mean, and again, being a male, I've never given birth, but it's very similar in the sense that you have to create something, and that creation of an asset takes effort, energy, and time. And just because you created it doesn't mean you're done. Right? You don't get to just create the child and then go, cool, you're here, good luck. No, that's to some degree, that's when the work really begins, right? And you have to help that child grow up and become something. And the same thing is true here with every asset you create. You have to realize that energy is energy that gets stored and released every time the marketplace derives value from it and takes it and consumes it in some way, which is the fundamental misuse of time that most people are still doing to this day, because we just don't understand how to make an asset. I mean, and today it's never been easier to make assets than it is right now, in my opinion.
Okay, all right. You can't just throw that softball out there and not expand on it. So why do you think now is the time to create assets the easiest of all time?
Well, because it's what you have to ask yourself, what does the marketplace place value on? There was a time where typing was the skill, right? But now, you know, 4-year-olds know how to type on iPad. That was the skill. That is not today's marketplace. Today's marketplace, though, does reward individuals who can create a podcast, for example, who can learn how to do a live stream, who can provide value in terms of actionable knowledge, or who are willing to, you know, take their knowledge and deconstruct it in such a way that it can help someone in many different ways. It's what we don't know that has always hurt us, but now we can know so much, and it's so accessible to us because of devices like these. These small little devices give every human on the planet the ability to create an asset. So, and I look at every video, every podcast, every article, every tweet, every image on Instagram. Those are all assets, right? And you take the time to make them and provide value to someone. Over time, you build what is the number one commodity today is attention. And if you can learn to attract, keep, and then eventually monetize someone else's attention by providing them something that they consider valuable, you're good. And all of us have the capability of doing that, so long as you have a cell phone. So long as you have that, you have what you need to create an asset. Before, there were gatekeepers to those assets.
Yeah, barriers.
But they're gone now. This is happening because the barriers have been absolutely shattered, right? And the preconceived notion of what someone who lives on assets looks like has changed completely because of the internet and its interconnectivity and the platforms that have been built on top of that connectivity. And those are the things that we as entrepreneurs should be paying attention to is, well, how can I turn that into an asset? Because once you've learned to create an asset and then you learn how to market that asset and sell that asset so it can provide value to someone else, you just keep repeating that process over and over again until you have enough assets that are producing the results that your company or that you need to produce in order to be out to be out there in the marketplace. And what's so great is that there isn't something any one person watching me right now, you can say to yourself, and if your brain said, well, I don't know real estate like you do, who's going to pay for that? I don't care what you know. The fact that you know something, have had an experience of any kind, is valuable to somebody. Mm-hmm. And so much to say, even if you've never or feel like you have never had success at anything, I'm telling you right now, you could go write an ebook on the 101 ways you tried something and failed and never tell them how you did it right, and that ebook would still go well.
That's right. Well, I mean, there's value in information and learning from other people. And like you said, learning from mistakes. I mean, if we can borrow that information so that we don't have to pay retail and go through the mistake ourselves, there's value. There's opportunity.
We've forgotten how to fail. We've flat forgotten. We've gotten so disconnected. We've seen so many images of perfection on social media that failure has become like something you don't want to be associated with. Yet, the entire Cashflow Diary brand has been built on, hey, here's everything that I've done that's not worked. I've done some things that have worked, but here is everything that I've done that has also not worked. Because we're not afraid to share what hasn't worked and how we've fallen on our face. Now, we don't repeat the same mistake in the same way, but hey, it happened. And show me a person who's achieved anything of significance that hasn't failed.
Right. No, that's so true. We have to learn from failure. So I want to learn from some successes, though. You good with that?
Sure.
All right. So I want to take you back. We're playing the game of Monopoly. You've traded in your four houses for a red hotel. You're moving down that path. But now, as I'm on your website, I start looking into things, and you figured out maybe there's a new game. But talk to me a little bit about the new game that you're playing and the cash flow that it's creating.
Got it. And let's be clear. It's not that the game is new. It's how it's played that's needed to change. Because what happened here is we, being a traditional landlord, it's a great way to build wealth. The challenge, though, is you need income, right? And those are two very distinct different things. So once you understand that concept, and for anyone who's been a landlord for any length of time, you know, especially while you have debt service on the property, you make this trade-off of, do I repair and make improvements, or do I have deferred maintenance and therefore cash flow? Because that mortgage or that debt service is eating up a significant portion of your revenue. And then I know some of you just said, well, that's why I just pay all of my properties in full. Okay, great. Wonderful. You just paid an opportunity cost, which is even more expensive. So, you know, and when you begin to understand that, what I started searching for was, well, how can I, because I just started asking myself the question, how can I still build wealth and get the income at the same time? So I thought originally what I started doing was I was looking at QSRs, quick serve restaurants, laundromats. My oldest was about to go into college. So I was like, hey, if I buy a laundromat near where she's going to go to college, not only that, she'll have a job. I mean, you know, I was thinking all of these types of things.
Love it.
So that we could increase the income at the same time. And what I discovered was, those entrepreneurs were that, man, it was really hard to do due diligence because you want to talk about somebody not knowing their numbers and understanding the importance of financial statements. It was really, really challenging to figure that out. So I kept running into a bunch of frustration trying to figure out which business to buy. And then in the process of all the instructing that I've been doing at this time, one of my students came to me and said, hey, just so you know, we didn't do what you said we should do with the money we raised, which is usually a really bad sign. It's like, oh God, what happened this time? And she told me, it's like, well, we started doing, you know, this thing over here. Have you heard of Airbnb? And we started doing short-term rentals. And here's what's happened is now our small little, you know, project has started to rival what we've been doing in the student housing industry. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting to me because student housing is kind of uber profitable. Tell me more. So we sat down, they showed me the numbers, and I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, are you sure? Because is that every month? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, you don't understand what you have. And they're like, no, what? Tell us. That's why we're here. And ultimately, what I helped them to understand was like, look, with some little tweaks, you could build this into something that's massive. And so long as that level of income continues, you have now the capacity to build a really nice, high quality real estate portfolio. And is what we now have broken down into our three-phase system of how we get people into real estate, owning some of the best quality real estate in their local marketplaces, very similar to what McDonald's does. And it's all through the path of short-term rentals. And I just didn't, again, it was what I was looking for. It just came packaged way differently than I expected because it starts with, instead of owning the property, leasing it, running it as a short-term rental, learning to do one, and then you take that one and duplicate that system vis-a-vis a, you know, opening multiple locations like a McDonald's would. And then what ends up happening is you actually, when you're following appropriate cash management procedures, like are illustrated in Profit First by Michael McCallowitz, you end up with free cash flow to where you can now have the down payment money and the experience to go along with it to now buy and hold and control real estate. And that was the number one thing that I kept running into in our, what I'll call our prior version, is individuals who would come to us who had the money to get involved in real estate, they never had the experience. And that was the challenge, is that you ended up trading your money for experience because that's really what ended up happening. What's that?
That's what they call a joint venture, when someone with experience and someone with money get together, they do a deal, and by the end of it, they swap places.
Exactly. 100%. And now I saw a way to help people get the experience with significantly less risk, because that's what ends up happening. By leasing the property first, you have at least a, you know, a 12-month, maybe 36-month commitment, and as opposed to a 360-month commitment on a particular piece of property. You get to learn how to do tenant screening properly, and you get to learn to do a lot of it in a very short period of time. You get to actually learn to customize. Because a lot of landlords think, oh, all I have to do is provide the house. You're forgetting the values created by the tenant, not the piece of real estate. And when you forget that, the business doesn't go well, you know? And when you start from that standpoint, you just have a greater shot. And what we've been able to witness is individuals who have quickly transitioned from, and when I say quickly, I mean 18 months, sometimes significantly less. Quitting their job is a bygone. That's a given. That's what's going to happen. What now is happening is, how many properties are you buying? Are you buying another fourplex? Are you, we have one student who not only did she quit her job, but she put her family in a position to where they are now purchasing, they purchased vacant land, and they're starting to build RV parks in Utah. And because, again, that even increases their IRR on the money that they were actually using to go out there. But they started with four short-term rentals, just four. And that's what's crazy, is that it doesn't take too many before people can free themselves from what they've committed to, which is usually a job, and they can begin to earn income that's disconnected from time. And that's the greatest benefit of the model, is your income to time ratio is so out of whack, so that you suddenly have the ability to actually put your time where you want it to go, And to me, that's the greatest thing, is being able to enable a father to be at his son's, not just the game, but what if he wanted to be at practice?
Yep.
To enable a mom to be at the recitals and to take the time to, hey, maybe that she can volunteer in the classroom now without feeling like they just sacrifice their capacity to maybe even eat out, go to the movies, or have a vacation.
Mm. Yeah, that's huge. So it sounds like to me that your strategy, you've given us really from start to current day.
Yep.
Your strategy started with this wholesaling idea. So now somebody that says, okay, Jay, I love what you're saying. I do want all those freedoms. I mean, this is what we preach on this show, a week in, week out, and day in, day out, mm-hmm. is we have to play the cash flow game in real life. We have to make it real, and we have to get the freedoms that we really want on the other side mm-hmm. of that equation. So somebody sitting with you, what's your advice going to be to start getting into real estate? Is wholesale still your first stop, or are you thinking the short-term rental is more advantageous for that person?
And not to sound arrogant or anything, I'm not thinking. I now know for certain, because I've had the privilege of teaching all across the globe, cruise ships, many different continents, many different nationalities, many different languages. Humans are humans. Okay. And having seen now what I've seen just from our student population alone, in terms of what they've been able to achieve, how many more have had consistent success, how many have been able to take that and transition into longer other forms of either business or real estate or investment in general, short-term rentals is the way, is the entry point. And I can prove it to you mathematically, psychologically, emotionally, because there's just too many positive evidences of why this business model should work, is working, time has come, and is absolutely what the marketplace actually needs right now, as opposed to more traditional real estate. That's not to say that traditional long-term stuff doesn't have its place. It does, except because of the barriers to entry, just like the internet. There was barriers to entry for media and television and all this other stuff. Those barriers are long overdue to be broken down. And short-term rentals provides that, especially when you start with what we call in phase one, where you're leasing the property first. Because nearly every person looking, watching, listening right now or years from now has the capacity to make a lease happen today. Yeah. Right? It's not a if it can happen. It's yes. Now you're confronted. Well, will you actually become the person that does it? So knowing what it takes to do wholesaling, it's a great way of doing real estate. And everything that I have been through, from wholesaling to international real estate, cell phone towers, commercial, everything I know, if I was starting over today, the only thing I'd be focused on is building short-term rentals. And I don't care how much money you have, because if you have a lot of money, what you don't have is experience, and you really need to build short-term rentals. You just need to build a whole lot of them so that you get the experience quickly. Because when you do the math, like if you were sitting on $250,000 right now, I know and I've seen that same $250,000, so you have a choice. You can go buy a building, wonderful. Or you take that $250,000 and you put it into a short-term rental model. With $250,000, you're probably going to come out with somewhere between 8 and 12 short-term rentals. Those 8 to 12 short-term rentals will give you your $250,000 back in 18 months or less on average. That's what I've seen. Okay. And now when that happens, you've got your $250,000 back and you have your 8 to 12 rentals. So now you have a choice. Do I do it again? Which most people choose to do, or do I let this business then keep producing that $250,000 so that you have the capacity to now go buy as much real estate as you want every 18 months? And that's really the difference here, is when you have this machine that can produce this for you, you can go buy higher quality real estate, keep your real estate in the best shape possible, have the income that you need while building wealth, and for many, finally being the example of the parent that you've always wanted to be. I mean, you've told your kids you can go be anything you want, and now they have a shot at seeing you do it first.
Man, that massive nuggets right there, Stallion. All right, so yeah. there's so many questions that I want to dive down to this, but
I'm here.
This is a podcast, and this is not an audio book. All right,
so I wish we had like a 4-part series.
Edit as you see fit, but ask away.
Don't you wish that there was a place that we could go and do a live Q&A and like ask deeper questions of Jeff?
Golly, if only there was a place.
If there was such a place that we could go and do that, man, Jay, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait till we dive into the live Q&A with you next week. And when we do that, we're going to dive into how you get started.
Sure.
And there's going to be lots of nuggets. Now, even in that, all the nuggets won't come out. So people are going to want to find you. They're going to want to find out how to get access to your courses. How can they get your content? Tell them how they can do that for us.
The easiest thing to do is to type cash flow diary inside any social media site, and you'll find us because that's us. On our homepage, you'll see a link to our standard presentation, which will give you the basics and understanding of how short-term rentals work and our methodology and understanding of it. And at the end of the day, I just want to be really transparent and clear. I have tried 90-minute presentations. I've tried 3-day presentations and of 8 hours each day. I still don't get through it all. It's a one way of saying that there's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to overwhelm you. I want you to just understand that, you know, you've spent decades, years becoming the person that you are. And now you're just being invited to become a different person. And that takes time. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, whoever told you that passive income happens in a 3-day boot camp overnight, well, that wasn't quite true. And over time, we can help you make the transformation. So again, just go to cashflowdiary.com and you'll be able to definitely catch up with us.
Man, this is awesome. Can't wait to get into the Q&A, learn more about it. Thank you so much for stopping in and dropping nuggets with us today.
Anytime.
And as always, thank you for listening to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Please tune in next week for our next guest.
Dad, do you have to go to work today? If you're tired of having to answer yes to that question and you're ready to stop trading time for money, join Russ and I on this journey to financial freedom at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. This is the place where you can take control. You can pick your own path and get there faster. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.